care of Joram. Oh, I'm sorry. And you're, it's going to be kind of freaky during these next verses. Joram and Jehoram are the same name in Hebrew. So what the NIV translators have done is they threw in a little breath mark. And what that does is that helps distinguish who we're talking about. But it's still going to be really confusing anyway. So we're going to see Jorams and Jehorams all over the place. So just be prepared for it. In the fifth year of Joram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, when Jehoshaphat was king of Judah, Jehoram, son of Jehoshaphat, and that's the other thing, we got Jehoshaphats all over the place, began his reign as king of Judah. He was 32 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 8 years. He walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, as the house of Ahab had done, for he married a daughter of Ahab. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Bad thing, that's right. That's a thumbs down. If you walk in the ways of the kings of Israel, that's the kings of the north, then that's a bad thing. And this is the king of the south. So a king of the south is following the ways of the kings of the north. That's not a good thing. And married this daughter of Ahab. Ahab's wife's name was Jezebel. So an offspring of Ahab and Jezebel, not a good thing. Yeah, and she turns out to be a rather wicked little creature. You'll see in a little bit. So this king of the south marries this evil woman, and he does evil in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 19, nevertheless, for the sake of his servant David, the Lord was not willing to destroy Judah. He had promised to maintain a lamp for David and his descendants forever. I'm sorry, I just realized this is not on the PowerPoint, but if you want it in your notes, 2 Samuel 7:16 is that promise. I thought last week I was going to go through a whole chapter, but we only went through half of it, so I don't have it up there now. But that's where God promises that that line of David, that's where the Messiah was going to be coming from. Verse 20. In the time of Jehoram, Edom rebelled against Judah and set up its own king. So Jehoram went to Zair and all his chariots. The Edomites surrounded him and his chariot commanders, but he rose up and broke through by night. His army, however, fled back home. To this day, Edom has been in rebellion against Judah. Libna revolted at the same time. This is just, it's trying to put the pressure, it shows the political pressure of the day. And it's going to happen here soon. The south, after the north is going to be threatened by Assyria. So the north decides to grab the Edomites and the Arameans, and they try to force the southern kingdom to all revolt against Assyria. It gets kind of crazy. This is like a big political mess. Everyone's making side alliances. It's like a bad episode of Survivor. Like, I'm going to have an alliance with you, I'm going to have an alliance with you. And whoever I get to backstab first, as long as it's the right person to backstab, they'll do that. And that's what's happening at this time. All this political stuff is taking place. It's all just to set up that. Verse 23, as for the other events of Jehoram's reign and all he did, are they not written in the book of the annals of the kings of Judah? We don't have those annals of the kings of Judah. Too bad. Jehoram rested with his fathers, meaning he died, and was buried with them in the city of David, and Ahaziah, his son, succeeded him. In the 12th year of Joram, son of Ahab, king of Israel, Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, king of Judah, began to reign. Ahaziah was 22 years old when he became king. How would you like that? And he reigned in Jerusalem 1 year. His mother's name was Athaliah, a granddaughter of Omri, king of Israel. He walked in the ways of the house of Ahab and did evil in the eyes of the Lord, as the house of Ahab had done, for he was related by marriage to Ahab's family. Ahaziah went with Joram, son of Ahab, to war against Hazael, king of Aram, at Ramoth-Gilead. The Arameans wounded Joram, so King Joram returned to Jezreel to recover from the wounds the Arameans had inflicted on him at Ramoth in his battle with Hazael, king of Aram. Then Ahaziah, son of Jehoram, king of Judah, went down to Jezreel to see Joram, son of Ahab, because he had been wounded. So the idea is the king's been wounded, and it's going to come into play here in chapter 9. I know that's a lot of names, and you're like glossing over on me. Yeah, come on, stay with me. We can fight through this, fight through that temptation. So right now, we're going to have good old Joram. Joram is the king in the south. He is not a good king, and he is doing evil. And then this is where Jehu comes into play. The prophet Elisha summoned a man from the company of the prophets and said to him, tuck your cloak into your belt, which means, we would say nowadays, pack your bags. Tucking your cloak meant that you could then run. So you're getting ready to send a message. Take this flask of oil with you and go to Ramoth-Gilead. When you get there, look for Jehu, son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi. Go to him, get him away from his companions, and take him into an inner room. Then take the flask and pour the oil on the head and declare, this is what the Lord says, I anoint you king over Israel. Then open the door and run. It's a great story, isn't it? So it's the third final part of the prophecy. Jehu is finally going to be anointed. Strange, I don't know the answer. Why didn't Elisha do it? I don't know. Elisha gets one of his seminary students and says, hey, you're going to go run, find Jehu, who happens to be the commander of the army, and take him, you know, privately, anoint him, and then get the heck out of Dodge so you're safe. And that's kind of good advice, because Jehu is, well, I'll just use the biblical term, he's a madman. He's a crazy man. He, not crazy as in stupid. He is crazy as in, let's just read what happens. This dude, Jehu. Jehu is a weird study in contradictions. Check this out. Verse 4. So the young man, the prophet, went to Ramoth-Gilead. When he arrived, he found the army officers sitting together. That's not good. I have a message for you, commander, he said. Well, for which one of us? Asked Jehu. For you, commander, he replied. So he gets there and he's got his buddy, so he's got to pull Jehu aside privately. So Jehu got up and went into the house. Then the prophet poured the oil on Jehu's head and declared, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I anoint you over the Lord's people, Israel. You are to destroy the house of Ahab, your master, and I will avenge the blood of my servants, the prophets, and the blood of all the Lord's servants shed by Jezebel. Now at this point, flashback, probably one of the most wicked things that Jezebel ever did was against a guy by the name of, oh man, I know it was tough, Naboth. Do you remember Naboth? Naboth owned a vineyard, yeah? And the king is like, I love that vineyard. That is such a cool vineyard. I think I'm going to go to Naboth and buy the vineyard from him. He gets there and Naboth says, oh man, family heirloom, man. I can't sell this to you. King gets up, goes back, and he's sulking around. He's pouting. He's got this long face on. And that's when Jezebel walks in and says, hey, sweetie, how's it going today? And he's all sad and mopey. And she's like, what kind of a wuss are you? I'm just paraphrasing. What kind of a wuss are you? Why are you pouting? He goes, well, there's this vineyard, and I really want it, and I can't have it because I went to him. He won't give it to me. I'll try to buy it. And Jezebel's like, oh, man, dude. Okay, I'll get you your dumb vineyard. So she goes out, has Naboth killed. Like that. And then comes back and says, honey, got a present for you. Here you go. Here's your vineyard. And Ahab's all, yay! And he's all happy like a, you know, a dumb schoolboy. It's very interesting. So Jezebel was one wicked woman, and she loved to kill people. She was also instrumental in killing off most of the prophets. Remember, she had a hunt on to try and kill as many as she could. That's when a dude by the name of Obadiah, if you remember, not Obadiah of the book of the Bible, but another Obadiah, he was hiding out 100 of these prophets in caves trying to keep them safe. Okay, so Jezebel, wicked woman, and all the time, I'm sure the people going, wait a second, how can this queen get away with all this evil? Is no one going to avenge this blood? Is anyone going to stop evil in its tracks? And that's when God says, it's been a little bit in coming to you guys, but it's perfect timing to me. I'm now going to come in, and I'm going to clean house. So Jehu, you've got to do it. You got to take care of Ahab, you got to take care of his family, and by all means, take care of that woman by the name of Jezebel. Verse 8. The whole house of Ahab will perish. I will cut off from Ahab every last male in Israel, slave or free. I will make the house of Ahab like the house of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, like the house of Baasha, son of Ahijah. In other words, they're going to be gone. As for Jezebel, dogs will devour her on the plot of ground at Jezreel, and no one will bury her. Then he opened the door and ran. So he gives the message, he's like, see ya! And he takes off running home. Jehu, well, now Jehu's kind of in an awkward position. He's the commander of the army. The king, Joram, is back home. He's wounded. And Jehu, as the commander, is supposed to be heading forward to fight the Arameans. And he's just been anointed to go back and clean house. And He's going to walk out and his buddies are there. His army friends. Well, gosh, what do you do? It's kind of a weird, awkward situation. So, verse 11, Jehu went out to his fellow officers. One of them asked, is everything all right? It's a good question. The original Hebrew is just one little word. Shalom? Is peace? Is everything good? That's kind of the sense of it. Peace? Yeah. Because it's funny because I'm reading this going, how did they know something was up? And then I realized, well, the dude just got anointed. I mean, he's plastered from head to toe. He smells like a French fry. I don't know if they had French fries back then. But he smells like this big oil thingy. And he's walked out, so his hair is probably plastered his face. His clothes are all sopping wet, and he's walking out. And they're like, dude, what's wrong, man? What happened? Is everything okay? Jehu, what was that? Yeah, don't light a match near the poor dude. That could be really bad. And then they ask, why did this madman come to you? Very interesting how sometimes prophets, dare I say, anyone related to God in any way, shape, or form, can be labeled as a madman. That's a very interesting word. It's going to show up actually throughout this chapter, so it's a key word. Shows up in other places as well. In the book of Deuteronomy, as God was laying out the blessings of obedience and the curses for disobedience, one of the things that he says in Deuteronomy 28:34 says, the sights you see will drive you mad. And that's the idea of if the punishment comes and the sieges happen and everything goes downhill, you're going to look at stuff and you're going to go, oh, that like drives me insane. Also shows up 1 Samuel. This is good old David. So he pretended to be insane. That word would be like a madman in their presence, and while he was in their hands, he acted like a madman, making marks on the doors of the gate and letting saliva run down his beard. So David, he's like trying to hide out in the Philistines, so he goes, acts like a crazy man. That's what they're calling his prophet. Also, in Hosea, the days of punishment are coming, the days of reckoning are at hand. Let Israel know this, because your sins are so many and your hostility so great. The prophet is considered a fool, the inspired man, a maniac. You got to admit, that's what's happening. God is saying, I'm coming to punish. And they're like, what are you, crazy? God can't do that. Ugh. Jeremiah 29, the Lord has appointed you priest in place of Jehoiada to be in charge of the house of the Lord. You should put any madman who acts like a prophet into the stocks and neck irons. So there's sometimes it gets a little tricky because you've all seen like really wacky madmen, right? And sometimes they act as prophets. But then there's also real prophets that go around speaking, and people are like, you're just a crazy person. That's what's going on here. So they're like, dude, in comes one of the prophets. They go in the inner room. They're like, this dude's crazy. And Jehu comes out, and he's full of oil. Here we go. Well, you know the man and the sort of things he says. Isn't that just like a guy? Yeah. If you don't know guys, this is a perfect statement. Like, he's like, well, you know, nothing really happened. He's, you know. Yeah, nothing, you know. The dude's just been anointed king over Israel, and he's like freaking out a little bit. And he is kind of a little off his rocker too, a little bit. You'll see it a little bit later on. And so he goes out to his buddies, like, dude, what happened? What did that crazy guy say? He's just crazy. Verse 12, that's not true, they said. Tell us, which is very interesting, because even though the prophets were considered a little bit off kilter, they were always right. So when the prophet spoke, they're like, dude, we got to take the prophet seriously, even if he is a little cuckoo. We got to trust that what he's saying is from God. That's what's going on. Jehu said, well, okay, he lets the cat out of the bag, finally. Here's what he told me. This is what the Lord says. I anoint you king over Israel. Just plain, simple. And check out this response. I don't know, I get amazed at the faith of people sometimes. I really do. They hurried and took their cloaks and spread them under him on the bare steps, which kind of sounds a little like Palm Sunday, doesn't it? Spreading the cloaks and the palm branches for Jesus as he's coming as a king. It's kind of interesting. There's a parallel going on there. They put him on the bare steps, then they blew the trumpet, that'd be the shofar, and shouted, Jehu is king. So now, Jehu, the commander of the army, is now anointed as king. He's got some of his closest commanders, and they're all now saying, you're the king. We're ready. What do we do? So, Jehu, son of Jehoshaphat, the son of Nimshi, conspired against Joram. He says, well, I've got to go and take care of Joram. Now, Joram and all Israel had been defending Ramoth-Gilead against Hazael, king of Aram. That's what we just looked at the end of chapter 8. But King Joram had returned to Jezreel to recover from the wounds the Arameans had inflicted on him in the battle with Hazael, king of Aram. So, again, he's wounded. Jehu says to his guys that just bowed down to him and said, you're king, if this is the way you feel, don't let anyone slip out of the city to go and tell the news in Jezreel. I.e., if we're going to do something, we've got to make sure that who's for us and who's against us. And we can't have any word leaking out and someone running back to the king to let him know what's going on. Then he got into his chariot and rode to Jezreel because Joram was resting there and Ahaziah, king of Judah, had gone down to see him. So when the look at, so here, you got this great picture. Jehu is coming. He's got his commanders and he's apparently got a couple other people that have joined him in the fight. And I think some of them are like, yeah, we got to get rid of Joram. We got to take care of business. They're probably thinking the Jezebel instance. The whole idea is there's times when you just got to get rid of evil. And you sometimes have to go on a rampage to get rid of evil. It's a good idea in your own life. If you got evil, sometimes you just got to go on a rampage to get rid of it. It's just got to end. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself because he's gonna lead this up. So Jehu is headed towards Jezreel, where the king is at. Okay. Verse 17. When the lookout standing on the tower in Jezreel saw Jehu's troops approaching, he called out, "I see troops coming." Well, that's bad. Whose troops are they? Get a horseman, Joram ordered. Send him to meet them and ask, do you come in peace? Like, who are these guys? Are they coming as like a peace envoy or are they coming to fight? He doesn't know who it is yet. Verse 18, the horseman, which, I don't know, I feel bad if it's like a suicide mission. The dude has to ride out to the oncoming troops. Like, what's going to happen to him? Horseman rode off to meet Jehu and said, this is what the king says, do you come in peace? Shalom? Shalom? What do you have to do with peace? Jehu replied. Fallen behind me. It's going to get a little bit later on exactly what's going on here. Essentially what Jehu is saying is, well, peace. Can you have peace when there's evil? And right now, there's evil reigning. So what do you have to do with peace if you're on that side? If you want real peace, fallen behind me. If you want to be on God's side, fallen behind me. Now, at that point, the horseman is in a little bit of a quandary. He was just sent out by his master out there to go see oncoming troops. He gets out there, lo and behold, it's not an enemy per se. It's the commander of the army, but he's coming to take care of business here. Well, which side are you going to join? The revolt or the evil? What choice am I going to do? He could say, dude, you're like a wacko. I'm going back. Or he could say, yeah, you know what? You're right. I need to join your army. Yeah? Yeah, there is a good question of, you know, whether or not the dude... There were rules of engagement, and one of those things was often you could send out communication, and you would give the communicators some free passage in order to get the message across. But yes, there is probably a possibility of, if I don't join you, I die. Which again, are you starting to make some of the spiritual applications coming here? Do you kind of hear what's happening? This is we're all going to be faced with a choice. What are we going to align ourselves with evil or with God's anointed? If I can say it that way, it's interesting. So, check out the last part of 18. The lookout replied, the messenger has reached them, but he isn't coming back. So here you are, the watchman, you're watching the messenger go out, and the messenger doesn't come back. So either A, he was killed, or B, he just defected and joined the other side. Oh, so Joram, so the king, brilliant, sends out a second horseman. When he came to them, he said, this is what the king says, do you come in peace? Jehu replied, what do you have to do with peace? Fallen behind me. The little guy reported, he's reached them, but he isn't coming back either. And that's when they finally noticed something. The driving is like that of Jehu, son of Nimshi. He drives like a madman. Are you laughing because that's how you drive, Andy? Is that like, you know, hey, yeah, don't let me know if I see you pulling in the park, like, wow, that dude's a crazy person. Yeah, that must be, you know, I can't pick on anyone here. You know, if I can notice you by your driving, I always wonder that too. If I'm driving, I got the little searchlight license plate and I'm driving, people notice me. Hopefully you're not known by your madman drive. But it's that same word, the madman. So Jehu somehow has a reputation of when he's driving the chariot, he's like a crazy man. He is out of control. So finally the lookout's like, well, the second messenger made it, but he's not coming back either. But king, look at the way that dude's driving. I've seen that driving before. That's the commander of your army, Jehu. And he's driving this way. Well, now as a king, what are you going to do? Like, why is Jehu, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be out fighting the Arameans. So the king's now in a quandary. First of all, he's injured. What do you do? Here we go. 21. Hitch up my chariot, Joram ordered. And when it was hitched up, Joram, king of Israel, and Ahaziah, king of Judah, so both kings, rode out, each in his own chariot, to meet Jehu. And you gotta love the irony of it all. Where do they meet at? They met him at the plot of ground that had belonged to Naboth, the Jezreelite. I mean, if you're Jehu, you're thinking to yourself, I don't think I could have planned this one any better. They come out riding out, you're riding forward, and you land in the very spot where that Queen Jezebel had just ordered an execution on an innocent man and left his family destitute and took his property. They meet at that exact spot. I love it. You know, I think God's got an amazing sense of humor. Not humor, irony, timing. It's brilliant. Brilliant. Verse 22, when Joram saw Jehu, he asked, have you come in peace, Jehu? So he's trying to find out, what are your intentions, Jehu? What's going on? Have you come in peace, Shalom? How can there be peace? Here you go. This is huge. This is your application verse. How can there be peace, Jehu replied, as long as all the idolatry and witchcraft of your mother Jezebel abound? It's a question for us. How can you have peace in your life when there is evil that just abounds in your life? It's a good question. The messengers were given this opportunity. Who are you going to fall in behind with? Are you going to align yourself with evil? Or are you going to get behind the anointed one? I was thinking about this. If God is coming in judgment, if Jesus Christ is coming in judgment, what part of his body do you want to see? Do you want to see his front side or do you want to see his backside? You want to see his backside. Why is that? Because that means you're going in the same direction he's going. But if you're looking at him and he's coming in judgment and he's square on at you, you're in trouble. Do you get the idea? That's why it's this beautiful picture as these messengers are coming out. Falling behind me. It's a call to us. Who are we going to align ourselves with? Do we align ourselves with evil? Or do we align ourselves behind the anointed one? Now, please, Jehu is not a perfect picture of Jesus, okay? Jehu goes off the deep end in just a little bit. So I'm not making a one-to-one correlation, but he is God's anointed now. Question for you. What are you going to do? Do you want to keep in evil? Do you want to let evil reign in your house, in your life? Or do you finally say, you know what? I think it's time maybe we do some cleanup. And that's exactly what we talked about a little bit last week with the treachery in our hearts and the evil that we have. Sometimes we just got to take an honest look and go, you know what? Things have got to change. So now he's coming And you know, it's interesting because Joram has an opportunity. Joram could say, you know what? You're right. There's evil. And as king, it shouldn't happen any longer. But he doesn't. Look at his response. Joram turned about and fled, calling out to Ahaziah, treachery, treachery. He knows his number's up. Jehu's coming to clean house. And instead of repenting, Joram says, no, I'm going to run. Hopefully I'll make it out. And you're the crazy person. Jehu drew his bow. This is why sometimes I think that maybe they could have killed the messengers. But again, rules of warfare, this is not a messenger now that they're dealing with. It's the actual king. Jehu drew his bow and shot Joram between the shoulders. The arrow pierced his heart and he slumped down in his chariot. Jehu said to Bidkar, his chariot officer, pick him up and throw him on the field that belonged to Naboth the Jezreelite. Remember how you and I were riding together in chariots behind Ahab, his father, when the Lord made this prophecy about him? Yesterday I saw the blood of Naboth and the blood of the sons, declares the Lord, and I will surely make you pay for it on the plot of ground, declares the Lord. Remember, that was that prophecy that because Jezebel had killed Naboth, God had not forgotten. Now they pick him up and throw him on that plot in accordance with the word of the Lord. When Ahaziah, king of Judah, saw what had happened, he fled up the road to Beth-Hagon. Jehu chased him, shouting, kill him too. They wounded him in the chariot on the way up to Gur, near Ibleam. But he escaped to Megiddo and died there. His servants took him by chariot to Jerusalem and buried him with his fathers in the tomb of the city of David. In the 11th year of Joram, son of Ahab, Ahaziah had become king of Judah. The problem that we have there was Jehu told to kill Ahaziah, king of the south? No. He was told to take care of Joram, king of the north. I have biblical support for this, so I'm going to say it. And I'll show it. Sometimes, in our zeal for righteousness, we cross the line. Jehu was given a job by God to do something that probably none of us would ever want to do. And in his zeal, Jehu goes on a rampage. He kills Ahaziah, the king. I don't know. It seems to appear, I'm just going to say this because the text seems to support this. I think when he gets into town, he's going to dispatch Jezebel, but I think it goes a lot further than that. And he kind of goes crazy. The reason why I say this, keep your fingers here, right here, 2 Kings. Flip forward now to the book of Hosea. Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea. Are you impressed? I had to memorize that from school. So I got to show off every now and then. Here we go. Hosea chapter 1. I'll give you some time to get there because it's a little weird. Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. So if you've gotten there, you've gone too far. Hosea chapter 1. I don't have that on PowerPoint, do I, Chris? No, that's what I thought. Because I wanted us to turn here. The word of the Lord that came to Hosea, son of Beeri, during the reigns of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the reigns of Jeroboam, son of Jehoash, king of Israel. When the Lord began to speak through Hosea, the Lord said to him, go take to yourself an adulterous wife and children of unfaithfulness, because the land is guilty of the vilest adultery in departing from the Lord. So he married Gomer, daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son. Then the Lord said to Hosea, call him Jezreel. Wait, we're in the valley of Jezreel in 2 Kings. All this is happening. Because I will soon punish the house of Jehu for the massacre at Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of Israel. In that day I will break Israel's bow in the valley of Jezreel. Jehu went a little too far, And I think it has to do with him killing the king of Judah, Ahaziah, because he wasn't told to. Later on, God finally comes in and says, yeah, Jehu did what was right in some respect, but he went way too far. And because of that, I can only let four generations of Jehu's dynasty, so to speak, go. And at the end of the fourth dynasty, he had to cut off that line. It is a reminder, once again, for us to always make sure that what we are doing is godly, is good, motivated by love. I can't hit that point enough. In our zeal, we often forget the love part of it. 1 Corinthians 13 lays it out perfectly. You could have faith and hear directly from God, but if you don't do actions then with love in your heart, God says that's useless, that's pointless, and it's not right. Does God want us to be holy and righteous like Him? Does He want us to fend off evil? Does He want us to be in line with Him, the King of Peace? Yes. Can we take that position and sometimes, many times, take that too far? Yeah. And that's what's happening right here. Jehu went way too far. And he's going to be judged for it ultimately. And that's a good reminder for us. When we talk about fighting evil, clearing out evil in our house, that does not mean if you have a little evil child that you sacrifice that kid. It doesn't mean that you go into your boss's room with a shotgun saying, I've got a holy instrument from God here, and I'm going to dispatch you, the devil, and all his minions. No! Yeah, darn it. No. That is never how it's done. Abortion clinics that have been bombed? Wrong! Do we fight evil? Is abortion in and of itself wrong? Yes. How do we take care of that? Through love. It's just that important. So again, I know that I preach a lot of this being strong in the faith. I know I talk a lot about us being, you know, warriors and we fight for God. That does never, ever give us a license to cross that line and become unloving. Remember, we do this all because we love God. And we love our neighbor. That's what Christ says. How do we sum up the Old Testament? Two ways. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And we always forget this part. Love your neighbor. When you take a look at people that are doing wrong, does your heart break? I mean, that's how I felt. Seriously, when I was at that street preaching. And I'm listening to some of the responses that are happening. And then this girl that wanted to come to faith, her boyfriend stepped forward and started talking. And he had some really good questions. And I just looked at him and I'm like, wow, I know right now you're like hostile to the faith, but my heart breaks because there's love for you that you just have not yet experienced. And if I could talk to you, I think things could change. But if I looked at him as some sort of person to debate and someone to humiliate, to make myself look good as I speak to him, then I haven't accomplished anything. It's up to us to... I'll get off this point. It's important. Jehu kills Joram, according to the word of the Lord, but he goes way too far. And I think that's a great reminder that for us, when we get behind the King of Kings, when we get behind the Lord's anointed, we don't go too far and have massacres take place. Verse 30. Jezebel. Then Jehu went to Jezreel. When Jezebel heard about it, I don't know who's crazier. She painted her eyes and arranged her hair, and looked out a window. Now, commentators seem to be evenly split on what she's doing. And they're adamant on what it is she's doing. So I'm going to give you both of them. Personally, I think maybe both of them are right. One, let me just take it to you. What do you think she's doing at that point? Trying to seduce somebody is a great idea, right? It comes, somehow, word has gotten around, Jehu's coming in. Well, gosh, what am I going to do here? Let me paint up my eyes, do up my hair. She's going to be from a second story window. Jehu. Yeah, I think that maybe there's this feeling that maybe we can, you know, I could seduce this guy and we'll be all good. There's another view. She's going to be a pretty corpse. Yeah, there are some that believe as Jezebel is influenced by a lot of the pagan culture. She herself was really into that stuff. Before they died, especially for a female, you needed to look good when you entered into the afterlife. And so some people say Jezebel is getting all gussied up because she knows the end is near and it's going to be lights out for Jezebel. Not a... Yeah, Jezebel is a very prideful woman, yeah. That's right. I'm going to go out like the beautiful princess that I am. Yeah, she could very much be having that as kind of her attitude. So there she is. So again, here's Jehu. He's riding in to the town. There's Jezebel. She's on the second floor. I'm lost again. Oh, verse 31. As Jehu entered the gate, she asked, "Have you come in peace, Zimri, you murderer of your master?" Wait, what's his name? His name's Jehu. Why'd she just call him Zimri? Because Zimri was another usurper of the throne. And Zimri had killed the king and proclaimed himself as king and only reigned for a week because he realized that someone else made a play for the throne and everyone was following them, so they were coming to kill Zimri. So Zimri sets the house on fire and it commits suicide. So Jezebel throws out this little zinger, saying, hey, Zimri. That'd be like, you know, if someone, you know, if you just betrayed someone and they're like, oh, thanks a lot, Arnold. Wait, is that right? Benedict Arnold. I got that right. Thank you. Whew, I got scared there for a moment. Yeah. Thanks, Benedict Arnold. And you're not calling him that they're actually Benedict, but you're saying you're a traitor. And that's what she's saying. Yeah, you're just a Zimri. You're just a usurper of the throne. You're not. And Jehu. She might not be trying to seduce him. She might be mocking him. It's very interesting. I don't know. That you could be very much right that maybe there's not this seduction that's happening there. Oh, and the text note that's there. I don't believe the text note because the text note says that it could say, "Or did Zimri have peace who murdered his master?" I don't think that's right. I think what she's saying is what's this peace you're talking about? You see, it is kind of interesting. You know, we talk about Jesus Christ as a Prince of Peace, but is he like some... Did Jesus Christ have to fight? Did Jesus Christ battle evil? But I thought he was a peaceful man, a Prince of Peace. Yes, because when evil abounds, sometimes the only way to have peace is to fight it. And that's what Christ did for us. We're never going to have peace unless we align ourselves with the Prince of Peace. So, the only reason why I say this is sometimes war is a very funny thing, and I'm not here to support or be political in any way, shape, or form. But we got to remember that when it comes to evil, God has a very specific agenda. It must be destroyed. That's why he died. So, he looked up at the window. Here you go. You ready for another application question? He looked up at the window and called out, "Who is on my side?" It's that same call. You and I, right now. Whose side are you going to be on? Make a choice. You can't do both. God won't let you. Satan will, but God won't. You know, I have found out, I think this has to do a lot with when Jesus is talking with his disciples. And he's saying some stuff that's pretty outrageous. Things like, if you want to inherit the kingdom of God, you must eat my body and drink my blood. And they're like, ew, that's gross. Now, it's interesting because if I was there, I'd be like Jesus' manager and like, hey, Jesus, you know, maybe you should talk about how you're speaking in a metaphor there and he's going to be instituting Passover and the body and blood of Christ with the bread and the wine. And, you know, Jesus, if you just speak it a little bit more clearly, you know, you won't have any problems. I'd be a really good manager for Jesus. No, I would not be. But that's what I would have done. Like, come on, Jesus, just don't be so offensive. And he was. And a bunch of people were like, dude, you're a whack job. I'm out of here. And then Jesus looks at his disciples and says, well, what about you guys? You want to go? And it's very interesting. one of the disciples says, Lord, who are we going to go to? You know what? I found out that options can be deadly. Options can be deadly. It's better to live our life with no option when it comes to our faith, when it comes to our life. Don't give yourself the luxury of, gosh, what would it be like to be a non-Christian? What would it be like if I could just let evil reign? Ask yourself, where are you going to go? It's a question. What choice are you going to make? And if you make the choice to be with God, make it, burn the bridges. Burn all the bridges to evil that you can find. Say, no, I'm not, sorry, can't go back that way. This is it. This is the direction I am headed, and I cannot go back. Because the disciples had made that type of commitment. They said, Lord, where are we going to go? We've already burned every bridge there is. We have to be with you. It's the option here. It's your option too. So he yells up, who's on my side? Two or three eunuchs look down at him. I guess he didn't know how many, two or three, that are essentially saying, yeah, we're with you. Throw her down, Jehu said. So they threw her down. Some of her blood splattered on the wall and the horses as they trampled her underfoot. The word, it shouldn't be horses. Horse, singular. Meaning one person is doing the trampling. Jehu. Jehu's taking care of business. Again, I'm not advocating that you go and start throwing people out of second-story windows or anything like that. Do you get my drift? But if we have evil, there's one place it belongs, out the window, trampled underfoot. If there are things that you are doing or a life that you are living or secrets that you are hiding, it is best to just say, I can't have that anymore. I will not have peace until that is gone. And it must be trampled. Because that's what Jehu does. Now, I'm not too sure if after that, Jehu kind of went on a rampage. Again, Hosea kind of makes it sound that way. Or Hosea is just simply referring to the killing of the King Ahaziah. I'm not too sure. But Jehu, again, might have, in his zeal, started dispatching. See, when we talk about battling evil, there is no such thing as good collateral damage or oh, some civilians got injured in that one. No, not in our fight. If in our fight we bloody up everyone else around us, no, it's not the way it is. So, Jehu went in and ate and drank, take care of that cursed woman, he said, and bury her, for she was a king's daughter. Oops, he forgot the prophecy, but that's okay. But when they went out to bury her, they found nothing except her skull, her feet, and her hands. They went back and told Jehu, who said, ah, this is the word of the Lord that he spoke to the servant Elijah the Tishbite on that plot of ground at Jezreel. Dogs will devour Jezebel's flesh. Jezebel's body will be like refuse on the ground in the plot at Jezreel so that no one will be able to say this is Jezebel. So the prophecy was given that after she died, no one would even recognize her. So the dogs came and ate. It's a bloody chapter. Jehu goes further in the next chapter. I was tempted to go through chapter 10, but I won't. We'll get that next week. For us, I think it's important for us to say, what side are we on? Do you want real peace? God has come, and he has given us himself, and has said, line up behind me. Join me. And when we do that, we find true peace. And if there is anything that is of evil in nature, it's time to get rid of it. It's time to take care of it. It's time to throw it out the window. Let's pray. Father, what a chapter, what a story. It's easy, Lord, I know for me to get so amazed at some of these details, but the point, you make it so abundantly clear that the point is, who are we going to line up with? Are we going to line up with evil? Or are we going to align ourselves with you? Are we going to take a look at the stuff in our lives and say, I'd like to keep that as an option? Or have we burned our bridges and said, it's time for us to follow you wholeheartedly? I ask, Lord, that as we partake of your body, your blood, this bread and this wine, that we would realize that you have taken care of evil in such an amazing way through the greatest act of love in human history, by dying on the cross. And I ask, Lord, that as we go out and as we see others, that you would give us all, that you'd give us more love to these people, love that transcends our human response that wants to just lash out, and that you would give us more power, that you give us power to follow you and be devoted to you. I pray, Lord, for a special time as we come to partake of communion, that you would be with us. I praise you for this time. So for communion, there's a table here. There's three in the back. The way we do it here at Searchlight is you simply go to the table when you're ready. We've got some songs. They'll be projected up here on the screen so that you can see the words. And you just simply go and you take the bread and you drink the wine. And that's what Jesus said. He said, this is my body, this is my blood. And I really don't understand that because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I'm one of those that just says, he said it. And he said crazier things than that. So I guess it's bread and wine. It's his body and blood. So I trust in that. And I trust that as we come, he says that this is given for the forgiveness of our sins. It's time for us to then come and say, I've got this evil. And you know what? You may not even have the ability to pick up that evil and chuck it out the window. And that's when God says, I'll come in. Yeah, I'll take care of this. I'll not only forgive you, but I'm going to give you my spirit. I'm going to give you more love. I'm going to give you more power so that this can get taken care of. It's time that we continue. We got to keep going. We're starting to climb this ladder. We're starting to get stronger. It's amazing when I take a look at Searchlight and what's going on. We're getting built up for something strong. And I just continue to pray that God, take us up. Take us higher. And that we do this all together. And we can only do this when we admit our sin. And then we receive God's grace. And it's a free gift that's given to you. Just fall in line behind him. You can't have peace, true peace, when that evil abounds. So it's time to take a look at that. So when you go, just simply go. There's tables, and the reason why we designed it that way is that you can stay and pray. No one's going to be bothering you. If you want to stay there the whole time, I guess you could. We'll